Hey guys, and welcome to a new special edition of the Money Podcast. We call it Money News You'll Really Use. The concept is simple. Every week I scan the financial news, and every Friday I give you the highlights. So we're going to quickly bring you up to speed on all the news, on everything you need to know, nothing you don't. And we're going to try to do it without boring you to death in the process. I'm your host, Stacey Johnson. My co-host, as usual, is Miranda Marquette. Say hi, Miranda.
Hi, Miranda.
Listening in and sometimes contributing is our producer, Aaron Freeman. Say hi, Aaron.
Hello.
And today we have a special guest, Hillary Steinman, a novice investor we have literally plucked from our audience. Welcome to Money, Hillary.
Excited to be here.
Okay. Let's get this ball rolling. But first, a quick disclaimer, guys. We're going to discuss specific investments in this show, including stuff I've personally bought. But these are not recommendations. What's right for me may not be right for you. So if you've got questions, consult a professional. Always get your own advice. Make your own decisions. Never hang your hat on what I say or what anyone else says on this podcast. Capiche? All right, then. Let's get back to the news. But first, we're going to make this a little more fun. Hillary and Miranda, and you too, Aaron, if you want, I'm going to give you guys some news items from the week. Every time I tell you a story, I'd like for you to tell me, when it comes to your money, is that story important or immaterial? Important or immaterial? You guys ready? Let's get started.
Let's do it.
We're going to start on Monday.
Oh, dear God.
There was a dramatic fall off in a handful of stocks owned by a hedge fund manager running out of a family office. His name was Bill Huang. Now, Huang made highly leveraged multi-billion dollar bets on stocks like Viacom, CBS, Discovery, Baidu. When those stocks started to fall, his fund was forced to liquidate the positions at any price. So they were falling. They were forced into liquidation. Result, stocks went down. Billions of dollars went up in smoke.
Didn't he lose like $20 billion or something like that?
He had that much leverage. Do you guys understand this story? Do you understand what happens when somebody gets a margin call?
Yes.
No.
Okay. Imagine you've got $1 million worth of stocks. You put up $100,000 and you borrow $900,000 from the bank. That's 10-to-1 leverage. Okay. Now imagine that stock goes down by $100,000. It's only worth $900,000 now, right?
So he was managing a fund that was leveraged?
Yes, he was managing his own money. That's why it's called a family office.
His own money.
But he was using that kind of leverage. So in my example, if that stock went down by $100,000 and you only put up $100,000 for collateral, now the bank's on the hook for $900,000. They're going to call you up and say, we need more money, pal. We're not going to hold this position. You don't come up with that money. They're going to sell that stock at $100,000 loss. And then what's going to happen when you start selling stocks? The stock's going to go down. And then it cascades. Gets worse and worse. And that's what caused the part of the Great Depression, you know, when the Dow collapsed back in the 1930s. So that's what happened on Monday. Now, let me ask you guys a question. Is that important to you, to your money, or is that immaterial?
It's not important to my money.
I don't think it's important.
My portfolio is doing just fine this week, and the market as a whole remains up.
Well, what did you think, Hillary? Important or immaterial?
I'm going to say important because it may be by way of, like a money market account or an account that is maybe tied to mutual funds that are invested in that fund potentially. There might just be some side effects of people in the industry being a little bit skittish in light of a big event.
That's a great answer. I mean, but both things are true. I mean, it's not directly related to your money, like you said, Miranda, but also several things could happen. First of all, these stocks went down. Viacom CBS, Discovery Networks, Baidu, and other stocks went down a whole bunch. Well, if you own a mutual fund that holds those stocks, that could have affected you. Most of them have come back somewhat, at least now. Viacom CBS has not come all the way back. But anyway, so it could affect you directly that way. But also, in a more subtle way, it invites regulation. Because some of these banks are going to end up with losing billions of dollars. Billions. And what happens when bank loses billions? Stockholders, or rather citizens of countries, may have to bail them out because these banks can be too big to fail. So it invites regulation. Like a couple of senators, what's her name? Elizabeth Warren. It's like, we need more regulation. So indirectly might have some long-lasting effects. Directly, maybe not so much, unless you own those particular stocks. Okay, guys, next story. rising mortgage rates. Are they becoming a problem? U.S. mortgage rates have increased for six consecutive weeks now. They're 3.17% average for the 30-year. That's the highest level since June. The message here is clear. The absolute low for U.S. mortgage rates appears squarely in the rearview mirror. However, by all accounts, U.S. demand still remains solid heading into what's historically the strong seasonal period, the spring and the summer. This creates all the necessary conditions for bidding wars. According to Redfin, there are only 645,000 residential homes for sale in the United States. That's about half of what there was last year. Is that story important to your personal finances or immaterial, Hillary?
I'd say it's important because I'm maybe going to buy a home in the next few years here. So I'm obviously concerned about the mortgage rates on those. And then also just the available inventory. Having a high mortgage rate along with high home prices is probably the worst situation you want to encounter as a potential home buyer.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, now, what about you, Miranda, who does not own a home? Do you think that's is that immaterial to you?
Actually, no, because part of the issue, like we have a very hot housing market right now in Idaho Falls where I live, and home prices are going up. It's hard to get a good mortgage rate. Credit's been tight because of the pandemic. We have a lot of income inequality where I live. And so the hot housing market makes it very hard. Well, here's the thing is if you can't afford to buy a house, then the rental prices go up. Because more people need housing. And so, and we also have low rental inventory here, as well as low homes, you know, as well as expensive homes for sale. And so when you have that low rental inventory, then rent prices go up as well. So yeah. Housing prices are just through the roof here. So it's insanity. I am fortunate in that because I was just checking into it. I'm fortunate in that I got into my lease. I got into this house that I'm in, and I am paying a below what is considered market rate right now. I'm paying below that right now in my rent. And so yeah, but, you know, when it comes time for lease renewal, who knows?
So no matter who you are, this is important news.
Oh, yeah.
What do you think, Aaron? Important?
Yeah, very important. It's really hard to buy a house right now. You have to bid against investors and you need cash on hand to try to beat them, but they always have more money. I can't wait for the pandemic levels to lower and employment to rise back up so people start selling their houses and moving around the country, so drop the prices.
Yeah, and you know, another thing too is if you have to put a lot of your money into your mortgage every month, that's less money to go into the economy that supports jobs. So, I mean, there's any way you slice it, this is important news for everybody, right? Okay, also on the 29th, that was Monday, after days of struggle, salvage crews freed the giant container ship blocking the Suez Canal. Immaterial or important?
Well, I think that's important. I mean, this was kind of clogging up global trade, and I don't know if it's going to directly like have a huge impact on your personal bottom line, but if you are waiting for some goods, it might. If you're a person who works at shipping and logistics, then you're going to be really sad. I was talking to a friend actually who works in shipping and logistics, and she was saying that like this Suez Canal blockage thing could still have ripple effects on logistics and shipping for several weeks to come. And while everybody thought it was funny now, and you can just like laugh it off for probably about another week, in about a month, people will have forgotten that this happened and they'll be like, where is my stuff? And so if you work in shipping and logistics, it's definitely impacting you and making you sad. But directly, you know, and global trade has its implications on your money and what's happening in markets and everything else. But as far as a direct impact on your personal finances, it's probably going to have a fairly small immediate impact.
What do you think? Hillary, aren't you in the logistics business?
Yeah, so I actually used to be a logistics manager. So it's interesting what you're just saying, Miranda. I definitely echo that point. In the immediate, I don't think it really does have much of an impact, especially just for a general consumer. But if I was still working directly in the logistics space, oh my gosh, this would be such a big headache. Thankfully, it's after Chinese New Year, which is a huge time during the month of February where people in general who are manufacturing their goods in China and shipping it all over the world have to deal with the backing up of production and delays anyway. And I can only imagine if this had occurred like maybe a month prior, it would be an even bigger nightmare. But I know that we will feel it, I think, from just there probably will be some supply shortages, but general consumers are probably unaware. Also, I think didn't have an impact on like oil and like the oil
supply.
It did
have a temporary impact on oil.
Yeah,
oil
it prices have.
Went There's up. Like a but they're 130 down now. Something ships that were backed up on that.
Well, you know, here's what I read, guys, that the there is a container shortage. You know, one of the important things about this story is that it exposed how easily the global supply chain can be disrupted. And so what a lot of the containers that couldn't get through the canal, it's going to take a long time to get those containers back into circulation. And as a matter of fact, I've read specifically that South America is having trouble getting containers to ship wood pulp to the United States. And what do you think that wood pulp is used in? Toilet paper.
No.
So here we might be going again. Run out and grab yourself an 8-pack because the bottom line may be affecting your bottom line.
How long did you work on that?
That just came to me, I swear to God. Next story. New space ETF takes off. Trading started on Tuesday with an expense ratio of 0.75% for the ARK Space Exploration Innovation ETF. Now, you guys are familiar with Cathie Wood? She's a rock star these days in these funds, these risky funds. But she's put together an ETF with 40 stocks in space exploration and innovation. Sound interesting? Something you might want to invest in, Miranda?
Yeah, I think it sounds interesting for something that I would invest in with some of my, you know, my play money, right? So like, if I were looking and, you know, sort of like how I invest, I've invested in, it's like I've invested in like marijuana. So like an ETF, right? But you know, I mean, ARK is up, it's had a good solid, you know, few days. I think it's interesting, and it's definitely something that I would look into as a cool kind of ETF to kind of just add. So I think it'd be fine.
What about Hillary? Are you millennial, Hillary? Is that what you are?
Yes, I'm definitely in the middle of that demographic.
Is this something that you think is a good idea, a space ETF?
I don't know. I don't know enough about it to actually, because I don't know enough about it and it's totally unfamiliar to me, I probably wouldn't. But someone like Cathie Wood, who's kind of in that pantheon of, you know, investor gurus, if she's saying something, I guess that maybe requires a second look. But personally, I wouldn't.
Yeah, I think it's probably
I would
go ahead. What?
I think anything space exploration wise is always operating at a loss, isn't it? And then anything that was innovative that ever came out of NASA, yeah, you know, they never, you know, reap the rewards of that.
But you know, this is a giant trend though, the commercialization of space, because you know, when we grew up, Aaron, actually everyone here practically, that was all government, right? It was all NASA. And now private companies are in this business, and private companies have stock. So one might be able to make money. Certainly an investing trend that didn't exist a few years ago. I think it's early, and I think these companies are probably not profitable, but something to keep an eye on.
Right. And like I said, I think Hillary's smart to say, hey, it's not something I know a lot about. It's not something that I personally want to put my money in. And I think once again, it goes back to, okay, understanding your own personal portfolio strategy, understanding why you put things in there. You know, so like I said, I think it'd be interesting for me to do as a, you know, I used to be a physics major. I used to write about science and technology. That's what I started as. Before I started writing about money, I wrote about science and technology and interviewed people about breakthroughs. And so I think that, you know, for me, it would be interesting because I would enjoy like, oh, I'm going to put a little bit of my money here. But I also know it's not money that I plan to retire on. So understanding, you know, the purpose of different types of investments in your portfolio and why, where it would fit in your portfolio and how it fits in your portfolio strategy is hugely important. And so I think Hillary makes a really good point in saying, hey, it's not something I know a lot about. It's not something that I'm going to stake my money on just because it's trendy. And I think that's an important point. You don't want to do something just because it's... Yeah, you don't want to do something just because it's trendy.
Yeah, Hillary might actually be on one of these rockets one day.
That's true. But I'll also say, too, that I did get advice one time that, you know, investing in an airline is a terrible idea because it's such a capital-intensive company to run, and they run at a loss a lot of the times. And I imagine airplanes and space shuttles probably work in a somewhat similar way. So I'm also using that gut instinct.
That's a good thought. Okay, moving on. Volkswagen. Volkswagen took the K out of its name, Volkswagen, and put a T in its place, Volkswagen. So it would accentuate the fact that they were going to be doing electric cars in America. Turns out it was an April Fool's joke. They actually weren't doing that. But it got attention, and including from the SEC. The SEC was not amused by this because... Because once they did that, some analysts are going out and looking at their stock and going, wait a minute, these guys are going to concentrate that much on electric cars. We better start looking at their financial statements again. So it was a big brouhaha, and there was really just over a joke. But it does kind of show a trend. I mean, obviously, this story by itself is not important or immaterial, but it's kind of cool. And there is going to be a lot of electric cars investing going on. Do you guys agree, disagree? What do you think?
Yeah, definitely. And even if you're not interested, because I think, when Hillary's talking about capital intensive and manufacturing, cars are not to the same level as airlines and stuff. But airline manufacturers and stuff. But you can also start looking into the different things that support those, right? Like lithium battery makers, places that make charging stations. So there's some interesting things that you can look into that support these in an underlying way that could be solid plays for the future.
I think, by the way, I'd rather buy Volkswagen. The price earnings ratio on Volkswagen is a hell of a lot better than it is on Tesla.
Right.
And I think Tesla's going to have a lot of competition. They are ahead of the game in technology, but I think the other global car makers are going to start catching up. So if I were buying today, I'd buy Volkswagen over Tesla.
Yeah. I think I was saying earlier this year, I just for funsies, I did a little Tesla, and I'm looking to, I mean, I'm still up on the Tesla from when I bought it. And so I'm just like, okay, what point do I take my profits? Because like you said, it looks like I'm up 10% on my time. I'm looking at my portfolio now. It looks like I'm about 10% on my Tesla investment this year. And so I'm like, at what point do I take profits and put something in with a better PE ratio? I thought it would be fun to do Tesla right after they did their stock split, because I could buy in at much cheaper. And so I thought that'd be fun. But, now I'm looking at it and going, maybe it's time to take some profits on Tesla and move on with my life and look into something like you're saying, Stacey, that's got a better PE ratio.
I applaud that decision. You know, I just looked up as you were talking, Miranda, the price earnings ratio on Tesla stock right now, as of yesterday's close, 1,064 times earnings it's trading at.
I did a lot of expensive related buys like in that realm. So you guys ever heard of SAVs? This is it's called shared autonomous vehicles. This is a big thing that, obviously Tesla and Ford and all these guys are looking into. And this is where you kind of buy a subscription. You no longer own your car. It's by a subscription. You go, hey, I need a truck or I need a car to go to the grocery store. It just shows up and you hop in and you go. That's the idea. So there's a lot of things that follow along that. So you can get an ETF in all that technology itself. And then you can also obviously buy the shares.
That's a good idea.
Company you want. And then the thing that underlying thing that runs it all is semiconductors. Because we have a shortage, I went out and got a whole bunch of semiconductor stuff, which that comes back. Builds back up because Ford is on a shortage. They need it, and all these other companies are on a shortage, and they need it. And
that's smart. I like the ETF idea too, because there's going to be so many companies doing so many different things in this arena that it might be good to have a little bit of lots of them instead of just one or two. Because there'll be companies that we haven't heard of now that are going to become huge. That would be my guess anyway. Okay, let's move on. Let's go to our biggest story of the week. Can anyone tell me what the biggest story of the week might be?
I would have guessed the boat, but you've already said that because that was what everybody was talking about.
Unemployment's down.
That actually is a good story too. But where I was going for there was the infrastructure plan being announced.
Oh, yes. Yeah, the infrastructure plan. Yeah, it is infrastructure week.
I was going to say, it's not passed.
It wasn't passed. So, I mean, you could make an argument that it wasn't that important because he just talked about it. But he's talking about spending $2.25 trillion. And a lot of that money will go into electric cars and all kinds of fun stuff. But, you know, it's going to be a big deal. They're supposed to try to vote for that. The House is supposed to vote for it in July, the Senate in August. Up in the air totally whether it's going to get through or not. But, boy, if it does, it's really going to change the complexion of the United States of America for years to come. I think so. I mean, I think it's that big of a deal.
And I think the biggest thing is that putting an electric grid for autonomous or vehicles, electric vehicles, that's huge. That's the one thing that's really missing to get Tesla and other electric vehicles off the ground.
Yeah, can't call that immaterial. That's definitely material that news.
Well, and I think it's interesting. Aaron mentioned the unemployment rate, and one of the biggest ways to get people to work is a big infrastructure thing like this. This is one of the things that, you know, helped get us out of the Great Depression back in the day, or large public works projects that employed people. And then in the 50s and 60s, the big expansion of the interstate system and the electric grid, things that get people to work, things that make it easier for people to get to work, and things that keep the economy moving forward. And so a big infrastructure investment. And actually, they tried that. They were hoping to do that back at the end of the Great Recession, back in 2009. but a certain party in Congress insisted that they drop most of the infrastructure spending out of the stimulus. But infrastructure, and if you look at economic studies, infrastructure spending is actually the best way to stimulate the economy.
I have a question.
Yes, I think you're right. Go ahead.
Does anyone know if like internet and 5G and all of that is included, or people are talking about that? Because I was going to say, I think that'll be really, it's very interesting, especially in like our new pandemic world with everybody working remote, or the rise of remote work for office workers. I think that'll be really key to see sort of the progression of that, because then people, if they move to more remote areas and that sort of internet coverage gets expanded for both people who are relocating to more remote areas, but also those who struggle to get internet access, I think it'll really open a lot of doors, and it'll become a much bigger part of economic expansion, not just from building the infrastructure itself, but like people having access to opportunities they didn't before.
And indeed,
well, I think Elon Musk's satellite internet might be more beneficial to that, but the 5G isn't really it's a faster internet, but it's not a great internet. You actually have to put a transmitter node almost on every corner of the street. It's really more designed for autonomous vehicles and things like that. People walking around, it's not great for rural areas.
Well, they're going to try to do so. I was just going to say, billions of dollars of this bill are devoted to spreading 5G and broadband internet, and particularly, Hillary, into rural areas. Whether that is done by satellite, you know, I don't know. But there's a lot of, I mean, there's billions just into research into stuff like this. So, but it's definitely, both those things are specifically mentioned in the bill.
Right.
And broadband and 5G.
Yeah. And as somebody who lives in a heavily rural state without a lot of really good internet access, like Hillary said, this brings a lot of opportunities for commerce and for connectivity. Because it's interesting too, because I mean, so many things are online now, so many things you have to sign up for. I mean, there's a huge push here where it's like, you know, we're literally, organizing people to help folks in rural areas go online to sign up for their vaccine appointments. So it's like a whole thing. So yeah, I'm super excited and really think that it would be great to see this infrastructure bill pass.
Yeah, I hope it does happen in some form anyway. I mean, I think it's a giant wish list now. Not all of it will be accomplished, and maybe none of it will. But it is exciting. You know, it's kind of I like thinking about making our country more technologically strong, because it's has been lagging behind China, frankly. And I think it's time for us to catch up. I think it's exciting. Of course, there's also the debt part. You know, no Republicans probably are going to go on this. And they're calling it, you know, Trojan horse of Democratic wish list. It's going to ruin our economy with debt. So we'll see what happens. But it's a big story, though. Okay, now, you know what we have to do? Let me take a quick break so we can pay a bill or two. And then I'm going to come back and give you guys 5 reasons you should be afraid of the stock market. We'll be back right after this. Okay, we're back. Now, an article that I read, this was in Barron's. It was actually called 5 Reasons to Get Defensive on Stocks. Here they are. 1, higher interest rates. That, as we know, can derail tech stocks in particular. And that has happened as rates have risen. 2, inflation. Inflation could get worse, especially when we just talked about the $2 trillion infrastructure package. That could create demand that turns out to be inflationary. Higher taxes. Obviously, corporations don't like higher taxes. And that is part and parcel of the infrastructure package. Too much speculation. Boy, we're seeing that with these fungible tokens that are non-fungible tokens, whatever they are. With Tesla trading at 1,000 time earnings, I mean, with the Reddit groups, I mean, there's a ton of speculation going in the market. Bitcoin's at $60,000. I mean, and this is what happens before market falls. You know, this kind of rampant speculation, and then finally supply chain constraints, which we just talked about with that ship. You know, one little problem in supplies, or as Aaron mentioned, with microchips. You know, with supply chain constraints could be a problem. If you can't manufacture something, if you don't have the raw materials, and if you can't manufacture something, you can't sell it. And if you can't sell it, you don't make any money. So these are all potential flies in the ointment. How scared are you, 3?
Well, not because I'm an indexer. No, I mean, so yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of things to be concerned about, especially if you are in a position where you're relying on your portfolio for income. If you're concerned that you're going to need to liquidate assets during such a time, and you may end up having to liquidate them when stocks are down, because I am still in my accumulation phase. If bad things happen in the stock market and it crashes, then I just buy more. So, because then in the recovery, then it's even better. So I think it really depends on where you're at and what phase you're at with your portfolio, where your portfolio strategy is. And we've talked about in the past, you know, I use a bucket strategy, and specifically with my son's college money, you know, I've had the money that we're going to need to pay for his college for the next 2 years. I've had that in safer assets than the stock market for a couple years now, because you never know. And so, we still have some of the college money in stocks, so that, you know, there's still that growth component, you know, 3 years out, but the money that we know he's going to need in the next 1 to 2 years for college, that's in less risky assets, and it is ready to be deployed for his college purposes.
But, you know,
is there a definitive definition between a crash and a correction?
Well, correction is 10%. The market falls by 10%. So
just
some
a second.
People use
I wrote
20%.
About that. I wrote about that for Forbes. Give me a second.
Really?
Sorry, are you?
Yeah, really?
20% is often called a crash. Yeah, I guess. But I mean, a crash is kind of a subjective term, though. I mean, am I right, Miranda?
Yeah, so a correction is generally agreed to be 10% to 20% drop in value from a recent peak. So it's a basically 10 to 20%. There have been 27 corrections in the S&P 500 since World War II, with an average decline in the index of 13.7%. However, they generally go back up. So like, they're all very different. A bear market represents a decline of more than 20% and lasts longer. So if you've got a bear market, you're looking at they average about 14 to 16 months in the past, which is longer than a typical correction.
Let me ask you guys this, and then we'll move on. Scale of 1 to 10, 1 being completely sanguine, 10 being panicked. Where are you right now? Scale of 1 to 10, quick answer. Go ahead, Hillary. Where?
I definitely say, like, panicked about my own, like,
no, I'm sorry, I should have been more clear.
No,
the fact that the market may be about to fall.
I'd say I'm definitely a 6.
Okay.
Okay, this is a trick question because one, I think that we're due for a crash, but I'm not panicked about it. So would that put me at like a 2?
Okay, then let's say due for a crash. Due for a crash.
Like, I definitely think we're due for a crash, but I'm not panicked about it.
Are you at 8? I mean, are you pretty sure that, you know, we're going to roll over here?
It's hard to say because the fundamentals, the underlying stock market, the underlying fundamentals of the economy were crap in 2017 through 2020. And so we should have had a stock market crash, but there were things that helped prop everything up and keep the stock market like shambling along. And also monetary policy and economic policy in the last couple of years has been nothing but propping up the stock market, regardless of what's happening on Main Street. So it's really hard to say, but yeah, I think we're due for a crash and we should probably have one fairly soon.
Okay, what do you think, Aaron? Scale of 1 to 10.
I'm not. I think it'll happen next year. I think because of governmental funding, you know, kind of propping up everything. I think job growth keeps coming back, and then that demand keeps going up. Everybody's getting money. Everybody's buying stuff. I think it keeps moving it forward for a while, but then eventually, I think it's going to reach another problem.
I don't disagree with that. But I do believe the market's priced for perfection. It's easy for us to see. I mean, if you turn on any TV or read any articles, you're going to see that the GDP is going to grow by 6%. Some say 8%. I mean, you know, we're going to have giant growth because we're coming out of this pandemic. But the problem is the market's already priced all that in. So, you know, whether the market continues to grow is a little more problematic. But I'd say 6. I'd say like Hillary said, I think I would not be surprised if the market rolled over here. But I'm staying invested as I do because I'm not smart enough to time the market.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah. And I'm not changing any of the way I dollar cost average into my, you know, in my funds, my index funds. I might not changing the way I dollar cost average into all of that stuff. It's my automatic investment plan. It just happens on automatic, not changing that.
Now, if there was another variant of the coronavirus that popped out that the vaccine's not helping out, then that could bring everything to a screeching halt. All the governors and mayors go, oh my God, stop the waterworks.
That's a good point, Aaron. And that could happen too. Like I said, we're priced to perfection. This recovery better happen, and it better happen big because we've sure priced like it is. I mean, in fact, yesterday the S&P closed at over 4,000 for the first time ever. And that's another news story that I didn't mention, but that is almost twice what it was last year. The S&P was at 2,192. Last year, that was its low, and yesterday it crossed 4,000. So we've come back a lot from the pandemic panic, and we better have post-pandemic perfection to keep this market this high. Okay, I've got to go over my market moves that I've made. I'm going to start telling everybody exactly what I'm buying and when I'm buying it, which is not going to take long because I very, very rarely trade. This is a flurry of activity I'm about to describe because I can go years without buying or selling anything. But last month, in fact, a couple of days ago, no, Monday, I bought Baidu. Do you remember me mentioning Baidu? That was one of the stocks that got trashed by that hedge fund manager, losing his family's fortune. The stock went down to 200. I picked it up. It closed yesterday at 219, basically 220. So I made 10% since Monday on that investment. Risky, though. I also bought the Spider Portfolio of Emerging Markets ETF. Now, I bought that back in mid-March. I bought that at 44. It closed yesterday at 44. So I'm not doing anything on that yet, emerging markets, because I feel like emerging markets are going to be part of this overall global recovery after the pandemic. That's why I bought an emerging markets fund. I also bought, now this is back in late February, I bought the Vanguard Small Cap Value ETF. Value funds or value stocks are ones that are cyclical often. They'll be banks, they'll be steel companies, they'll be car companies. In other words, old economy companies. They should do well as the economy recovers. So I bought that small cap value ETF at $160, closed yesterday at $167. So I'm okay there. And mid-February, I bought Global Infrastructure Development ETF in anticipation of what happened this week. Not a big gain, though, so far. I paid about 23 for it. It's about 25. So hopefully that'll pick up if the infrastructure plan goes through. So those are the moves that I've made with my personal money. And like I said, that's probably about as active as you will ever hear me, because I often just buy stuff and hold on to it. And I've got one more thing, and then I'm ready to call it a day because we're getting long in the tooth here on this podcast. This is good. This is just something fun for you guys. Here's a tweet from Donald Trump from last July. Quote, if you want your 401ks and stocks, which are getting closer to all-time highs, to disintegrate and disappear, vote for the radical left, do-nothing Democrats, and corrupt Joe Biden. Now, you probably remember Trump saying that the stock market was going to collapse if Biden was elected. So here's my question to you guys. It's been in the first 50 days of Joe Biden's administration compared to the first 50 days of Donald Trump's administration, who had the better stock market?
I guess I would say it's probably about even, but I know that just because it was already pretty high when Biden entered, and I can't foresee it being a crazy jump, but about even, because I know when Trump entered office, the prices went really high.
Okay, Miranda?
Well, I have insider knowledge since somebody asked me this yesterday, so I already know the answer is Biden.
Oh, okay. That is correct. But actually, Hillary's correct also. They're almost the same. 4.6% first 50 days of Biden presidency, 4.4% first 50 days of Trump's presidency. So with that, we're out of time. But we're never out of topic. Dig deeper, guys. You're going to find links to lots more info in our show notes, including all the stories that I mentioned today. And remember, if your goal is to make more, to spend less, to retire rich, your online home is moneytalksnews.com. And don't forget to check out Miranda's online home as well. That is Miranda Marquit, MARQUIT.com. And we certainly appreciate having Hillary Steinman here. You are a welcome addition, Hillary. Please come back again. And one last thing, guys. If you appreciate what we do here, do something for us. Subscribe to this podcast. Takes you 2 seconds. Really helps us. So if you like us, show us and subscribe. I'm Stacey Johnson.
And I'm Miranda Marquit.
And I'm Aaron Freeman.
Yes, you can say your name, Hillary.
And I'm Hillary Steinman. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks for hanging out with us, guys. We'll see you right here next time.